Someone wake Willie from his slumber, because we're heading into Severance season one. We're going to talk about the entire season. Ben Stiller, executive produced, a genius series here. I enjoyed every single second of it.
I would like to not talk first. Bryce, what did you think of this?
I think this is one of the best shows on TV.
Full stop.
Yes.
Just, it's fantastic. There was an interview with the creator about why they ended the season where they do, which is in the middle of all of the Rising action and right as all of the innies get shut off.
It was agonizing to watch.
Yeah.
And agonizing to find out that was the last one of the season.
So many good surprises too, right? Like things you would not expect. Mm-hmm. I know that one of the things that shocked me the most was the main character gets sent to sort of like a therapy session almost. And then they're watching from the feed and you find out, oh, wait a minute. She's
his wife.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was a complete shocker to me. I was like, mind blown.
This is a hard dance to carry through to completion. And we have yet to see if they will carry it through to completion. But what they did in season one was a great job of having a minimalistic world. Even outside of Lumen, we don't have a lot going on. It's the main character and his sister and the next door neighbor, and that's about it, right? And sister's husband and all that. Inside, it's very sparse, literally, right? There's four desks in a big empty white room and all that. And so they did a great job of using that to set up questions and answer three quarters of them, but add another question. So that you're always feeling satisfied, like it's progressing. Like, ooh, we found out a mystery. We found out there's other people work here. What is their life like outside? You know, but then they keep adding new questions. Who are they? You know, why is the boss also the next door neighbor? Some of which got answered and some of which didn't. That's always a hard situation to finish, because you want to finish with good answers, but not the answers feel forced. But I'm incredibly optimistic that they'll be able to pull it off.
Everybody is great in this show. The characters are great. They're well written. The set design, when it's minimalist on purpose. And I don't feel like we've really busted out into the wider world. And maybe we never will. But mm-hmm. I mean, there are essentially three places. There's Lumen, the house, and I don't know, streets, basically. Mm-hmm. To me, if we're going to talk pure acting ability, the actor who plays Mr. Milchick is next level. Like, next level.
Trammell Tillman. I just happened to have the IMDb page pull up right then. Yeah.
Bravo. Next level insincere smiling, next level menacing and awful. And then he does this, like, clearly relaxed jazz in the moment dancing. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's supernatural and only codifies him. I mean, my goodness, I was blown away. It was incredible.
And the fact that he goes from, like, you know, like, oh yeah, he's the happy, upbeat security guard that you pass by in the halls and are so happy to see him because he always has a smile on his face, to go from that to, like, I will end you. Like, this is not what you are supposed to be doing right now. You get back to your cubicle. That, yeah, amazing.
Also, kudos on pulling off the most difficult of narrative treats, which is a genuine surprise, because it was only around episode 8 that I realized, oh, wait, we're going to do this heist where they're going to wake up on the outside. Oh, well, I know what Mark's life is, and we got a glimpse into Dylan's life, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
See some of Irving.
I guess we'll see a little bit of Irv, you know, but I really know nothing about Helly. And I'm like, it's awfully late in the series for me to know nothing about Helly. Mm-hmm. And then it was great.
What we knew about Helly was incredibly intriguing. They were thanking her for doing what she did. So you knew, like, okay, is she a test subject of some kind? Is it an investigation? Like, why did they thank her for that? Because they did that early on. They mentioned thanking her and her being a special person. The board talking about how she was special to be doing this. Had no clue that she would. I kind of figured she must be from inside Lumen. Had no clue that she was going to be Kier's daughter, basically.
So I love that they made Irv so one-dimensional and uninteresting, and then they added a second dimension with him being romantically inclined to what's his name?
Bert.
And then all of a sudden,
oh my God, Bert and Irving.
Oh yeah, no, I picked up on that.
Oh
yeah.
My God,
Irving.
Yeah. Too cute.
When we get a glimpse of Irving's outside world, that sets up, you know, whatever the testing room is, that image that he's haunted by that he paints over and over and again. But then when he wakes up, yes, his core drive was to find Bert, and he, you know, finds out that he's too late. Bert's already got a life outside of Lumen. But more importantly, I was fascinated by the trappings of his world. Like, do you think that Irv was a private investigator who intentionally was going in thinking that he would be able to maybe penetrate past the wall of Severance?
Oh,
because we see all of the tracking that he's done and the names and in the secret compartment and all that stuff.
It took me a second to realize, like, oh, that was already there.
Correct.
Because otherwise, all we've seen of Irving is that he paints the hallway
and he walks his dog.
Yeah, I think what he is doing, if I'm projecting, and this is me making stuff up, I can totally imagine Irving being a private investigator who wants to track down and figure out what's up with Lumen.
I don't know if he's a private investigator. I get the sense that he is definitely trying to figure out what's going on inside Lumen, but the obsessive painting implies that it's like maybe he's a former private investigator, but it's like it's an all-consuming passion for him for some reason.
Or maybe he's trying to, because as a matter of fact, in his retirement ceremony, the videotape of Bert says, "I'm sure at some subconscious level, I have good feelings about all of you, even though I don't consciously remember any of your names or faces or how many of you there are or whatever." Like, it seemed to me that what Irving was doing with his painting was obsessively trying to tap into that just below the surface memory, and he was only able to get that one image.
I got the impression that he was painting what he saw the last moment before he severed.
Interesting.
It was trying to paint details to see if he could glean any more from what little memory he had. He's obviously a very passionate person, right? Because he's a Kier enthusiast inside. So maybe he was a Kier enthusiast who was spurned.
I would think it was the opposite.
I think that love are the same energy, just in opposite directions. So,
yes, obviously, but I'm also jumping to and maybe the reason he has the opposite energy now is because he was once a true believer.
And if you think about it, that's how all the characters are, right? Like, that's how they get to that point where, okay, we're going to perform this operation to try to reverse whatever is going on with us and try to find our out selves, like our outies, right?
Yeah, and for the British in the audience, that's outie with a T, not Audi like the car.
Right, right.
Can we talk about the waffle party?
Yeah.
Or we could talk about
it did involve waffles.
It was a party.
So
yeah.
Oh,
there were several parties.
Yeah, I want to mention like the dinner party where there's no dinner. Like, I've never seen that. Like,
oh no, that was in my mind, we have to establish that this guy is silly and laughable in the outside world for his new age hippie
pretentious
stuff.
Yeah, you know, upper crusty friends who do trendy things.
Gotcha. Yeah, totally. Okay.
Yeah. And then, but meanwhile, I like to think that I don't get uncomfortable very easily, but, somebody decided to really sexualized the actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf video into a segment to make it uncomfortable for everyone.
Mm-hmm. It's very weird, right? Because like in the world of the innies, like that's probably the closest they're gonna get to sex.
All the action they get,
which is doing the painting of him whipping the four woes with the nine-tailed virtues, and
also it was a weird set off that you had all these perks that were super innocent. You get a finger trap. Oh, you get a fun dance party. You get a waffle party. It suddenly took a turn.
Yeah,
it was not expected to go that way, direction.
It's like they put Eyes Wide Shut and preschool Bible class in a blender.
Right,
and that's
right.
What came
it's
out.
Like, it was like the preschool Bible class was like, well, a level one you get a sticker, at level two you get a free Bible, and at level three you get masked people with whips nakedly sexually arousing you know.
Mm-hmm.
What
was everybody's like biggest moment of the season? Because for me, it was when Miss Casey is talking to Mark in her in that last wellness session and saying, "I have only been alive for 100 hours, and the 8 hours that I spent with you all was the best I've ever experienced." It is so heart-wrenching to realize that she was not just a machine, basically, but she was like not even alive or awake most of the time.
A step back from that, I actually thought it was pretty clever that they were intentionally obscuring the face of his wife, and I bought in. I got totally tricked and fooled, and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. We're never going to see her face because it doesn't matter what her face is. She's right. A MacGuffin. Yeah. She's the thing he lost. That's, oh my God, they showed her face and we've seen her.
Yeah.
And I full on have goosebumps right now remembering that moment.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
And it was like just after the episode where like the Innie Mark and Gemma, they like have to cross each other in the hallway, and they have to do, it's like an old performance art thing, but the idea of squeezing two people through the same hallway and which way do they turn to fit through it. It was such a great, reveal.
Also, I loved the bit where they like, you know, the sort of cargo cult aspect of finding the book and Rickon's words becoming so important to all of them.
Page 197 is lit.
he wakes, and then Mark wakes up at Rickon's reading.
And gives him
the heartfelt reaction of Mark the Innie that Rickon is like, you're effing with me, man.
I do love that they didn't waste too much time. They gave credit to us, the audience, and credit to Mark S. When he put pieces together, that it's like, that's my sister, that's her husband, that's the baby. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm brother-in-law with the author of this book, and
with
that's probably how it happened and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very silly minor note. You know, when you do production, you notice production things. There's that moment when Mark's sister has the baby in the chest holder or whatever, mm-hmm. and she's at the top of a hill. There's some dormant trees behind her, and she sees the state senator's wife down there. And during that time, there's a brief moment like a hawk passes for all of, I kid you not, 1.5 seconds. But in that 1.5 seconds, some sound designer felt the need to put a in there. And then later there's a morning scene that I'm certain was shot in the same place, and I'm certain is the same bird, big ass bird, but it's morning, so the same bird goes chip 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 chip. It's amazing.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I think Britt Lauer deserves props, as the whole freaking cast does, but being able to play a convincing Helly and convincing outie Helly as well.
And by the way, how confusing did, like, we're rooting for a romance between Mark and Helly, and then we find out that his wife is still alive, and I'm like, oh, kiss her. Oh, but don't. I don't know.
And that's the whole point of this story, is, like, when you sever the personality, have you created a new person?
Yeah.
Right? This is one of the dilemmas of that. Marques isn't cheating.
Yeah, because you've also got the other, I completely forgot her name, but the other woman that he goes on a date with too, and like
Alexa.
Yeah, Alexa, and just set off
Add
everyone's Amazon
chips to shopping list.
No, but she has that relationship, and definitely sees when Mark comes back with like the bloody stained clothes and everything.
I don't think she saw the blood stained
clothes. But
Bryce was asking, what is the moment? That's a fairly wonderfully brutal moment of the surprise murder of the security guard. Mm-hmm. And they very cleverly, or not cleverly, they very skillfully obscure the horror of a bashed in skull. Mm-hmm. And Mark very clearly conveys how horrific it is. And then the amount of blood as they drag the thing. And that moment he's about to vomit, and Alexa's what's her name? We don't know her name. Is like, don't you dare, there's DNA in there. That was for me when the hard left turn of this show, when it got brutal and visceral and very, very real.
Because she only had that one appearance, I want to say. I guarantee you season two, she is going to have a much bigger role in season two. Like, I would not be surprised.
Watch her die in the very first frame.
I was about to say. as a stand-in for the Resistance, I would not be surprised at all if she got recast. But it did.
She dies in the Snapchat off-season series that they use to prep you for.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought a funny little thing. So this takes place. It seems to take place in a contemporary time to today. It is.
Sure.
There's smartphones. There's DVD film stuff.
Yeah, in the not too distant future, if not exactly the present.
One thing that's really interesting is we do see smartphones, but it's been a thing in the news that, like, if you have an iPhone in your program, only the good guys are allowed to have iPhones, and everybody else has to have generic phones or other brands. And there are no branded smartphones in this. But there is a sequence near the end of that last episode, the severed story, that looks a lot like an Apple keynote with all the mm-hmm. black and white photos, and it looks like when they do tributes to like Martin Luther King. And
complete side note, by the way, in that aspect, I'd like to think that Apple signed on to this project because Apple themselves would love to have something like this in the real life, where the Apple employees do not remember anything after they leave the Apple campus.
I think that would be a bad look for the company, Apple.
Allow me
to respectfully disagree with your thesis.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and honestly, I think we tend to exaggerate how much companies interfere. They, and not to say they don't, but I think we tend to exaggerate it and look for it. So I don't know if the lack, or if that phone showing up means anything really, but it might.
Yeah.
So can we speculate about motivations, specifically, Miss Selvig, Cobell on the inside? Mm-hmm. She is clearly defying protocol in front of Mr. Milchick by allowing MDR to go explore and discover things. And for a while, I was floating the theory that she's a true believer of Kier, and she's also the oldest insider that we've seen until the last episode. So I was wondering if maybe, because it's pretty clear that severance is a fairly recent procedure that is being tried on by Lumen. And I wondered if secretly she wasn't rooting for MDR to take down Severance in service of Kier's writings.
I think the last episode betrays that.
It does. It does
because
to
she works
break it,
so hard to stop it.
Correct.
Right.
I think that if there is a weakness in this story, it's that they fire her. I understand why the story needed that to happen for it to end in the way it did, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Lumen is so careful about everything else that they might fire her, but they wouldn't let her get away. They, you know, they wouldn't let her become a loose cannon.
Which
ends up working in their favor that they did, but I wouldn't have expected her to live long, honestly, as a fired employee.
I'm still not ready to totally discard the possibility that she works with our four heroes of MDR at some point. Oh, also, speculation going into season two. The Innies, their last memory will be on the outside. I can't imagine that Mark's sister is going to let him go back to work for any reason, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that Helena, Helly's outside character, mm-hmm. is going to definitely go back in and force her to whatever. Not sure if Dylan ever leaves the property since he's been caught.
Well, MDR's done. Those four people are not going to be allowed to work together anymore.
Correct.
Right?
But
mm-hmm. So it's all about what steps is Lumen going to take?
What here's my question. Is the Innies have had their consciousness snapped shut. When it opens, what do they see? What is the next thing their Innies see?
I guarantee you they're probably going to play the aspect of, because they definitely played it where you know, they would go into the elevator for the end of the day, and then like literally the elevator doors would open and it's literally the next day. It's going to be one of those things where they have that flash sequence of like everyone is where they're at. And then it's like a flash sequence of, oh, they're back in the office again.
I don't think they're back in the office the way we've seen them, though.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I don't think Lumen lets that happen.
Although, hold on.
I think you're right about Dylan not being allowed to leave. I like the idea of we replay the three outy experiences where they're aware, and then the moment that Dylan lets go, we snap to whatever has happened to them since.
Although,
which would mean I think they bring Mark in. I think they bring Irving in. You know, for some sort of interview debriefing, and Helena probably just voluntarily sends Helly in.
Although,
so that might be a guess is some kind of interrogation or wellness or some other weird thing.
If this were the Severance writer's room, I would definitely pitch after everything we've seen, the biggest confusing mystery of all would be the beginning of season two is they're back to work. And they don't have any idea. Like Mark is thinking, how on earth could I be back here after what happened? Helly is thinking the same. I mean, that's gotta be how they open season two. And then they reveal that mystery over time.
Or it's a situation of they try to fix the error of whatever happened, like a glitch in the matrix. Like they got away, and what can we do to reverse everything that they know up until this point and try to get them back on the right track, so to speak.
There's certainly a case to be made that all three of them, Helena for sure, but even Mark would be like, what are you talking about, sis? You're exaggerating. Cause he has no recollection of any of it. He's suspicious, but he probably thinks like, it's probably not as bad as she said. Let me send him back in to see what happens. I could see that happening. I could see maybe Irving does that too, because he wants to find out more about, he doesn't remember. There's real reasons for them to all be gone back in. I sort of like the idea of the fake out of like, they wake back up and they're all four back in MDR and they're talking to each other. It feels too done. It's like, oh, okay, but I know they're not okay. So I don't know that I would go that direction.
May I remind you that we just spent 5 minutes coming up with questions we would have, and the best and an important thing in writing is to not answer questions directly, but instead open up new questions.
But just showing me all four of them back in MDR, I would be disappointed with that. I'll be honest, as a viewer, I would want to be surprised more than that.
So
maybe they're back in the office and they don't know why, but it's not just back at work.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. That's
it's definitely not going to be,
maybe they're in four interrogation cells or
Yeah.
No. Okay, whatever. We're writing a show that we don't work for. Whatever. Pay.
Yeah. Why?
Pay me,
we're not
Apple.
Doing this for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, go away. You are absolutely right, Brian, that if they do this right, and I have every confidence they will, they are going to start the season proposing a bunch of questions. They're not going to answer them.
Well, or at least they're going to, that'll be the called shot at the beginning, is that you'll get answers. And we got a lot of answers this, but not as many as we'd like. And so called shot, we'll fill in the gaps. That's their quest.
Have you guys come up with or heard any theories about Severance? I've heard one that I thought makes some sense.
Go on.
All okay. Right. Lay it on me.
The idea being that what Lumen is trying to do with the Severance procedure is to sort through candidates that Lumen has maybe a limited time access to. Those would be the files that the MDR people are sorting through. They're looking for someone found out that when they categorize numbers and you see there are categories in the different boxes, those four categories match up with the four woes. Here's four woes. Woe is one of them. But the four sins, basically. And so the idea is maybe what Lumen is doing is they're able to grab vulnerable people for a short amount of time, maybe like with Gemma, Mark's wife, who might have really been in an accident. They have a limited time to capture those people and guess if they're going to be a good match for Keir, and then sever that person, indoctrinate that new personality as, oh, you're Keir. Hey, you're Keir. Check it out. And then get rid of the Audi, and congrats, you've got Keir living in a new body. They named the town after him.
That seems very convoluted.
Which is what most theories are, to be fair.
I kind of feel like trying to figure out what Lumen's doing is like trying to figure out the MacGuffin in a Hitchcock film. I'm not sure we ever need to know what Lumen's really doing. Yeah. I feel like we could only be disappointed by what Lumen's actually doing.
Yeah.
When I say actually doing, I don't mean like the secret of what's really behind Severance and Heli and all that. I mean like what those numbers are on the MDR machine. I don't think we need to know what that is.
I don't think that
necessarily plays into anything.
I don't think they're important. I don't think that there's anything that we've seen that those numbers are actually important other than people saying that it's mysterious important.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. That's the theory. And
All right. No. Nothing wrong with the theory.
I'm very, very glad that they've already renewed it for another season. I'm very excited.
Yes.
Oh, they
any
were,
other
they
thoughts
knew.
On Severance season one?
Here's a new thought. It's great.
That's not a new thought. That's the best thought, because you're right.
I must have forgotten.
That is Severance season one. Folks, what do you think of Severance season one? CordKillers@gmail.com. Let us know. You get these episodes early if you're a patron. So if you're like, wait, why didn't I get this episode a couple days early? It's because you mainly were needing to become a patron. Patreon.com/CordKillers. Thanks again, Willie Scott, for hanging out with us. Remind folks once again what you got going on.
Oh, absolutely. So, and I would actually point people to this because Spoiler in Time is very much a series on three separate things. If you want a discussion on one movie where we go in depth on it, cinemavention.com is the website to go to. And I have not seen a lot of movies in my lifetime. And the premise is I'm watching it for the first time. My guest has seen it 1,000 times. So honestly, if you like Spoiler in Time, I think you'll like Cinemavention a lot.
Excellent. Thank you, Willie Scott. W. Scott is one. Next week, folks, we will not be in time for Better Call Saul because it comes on Monday. So we will be watching an episode of Miami Vice starring the one, the only, Willie Nelson. That's episode 7 of season 3 called El Viejo. We'll also be talking about episode 3 of Moon Knight and episode 7 of season 2 of Picard. We'll spoil you then.
Time. Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.